Welcome to another edition of Brio TV, the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Super Channel, where an all-new season of When Calls the Heart returns exclusively to Super Channel Heart and Home. And by Hollywood Suite, the home of Helter Skelter, an American myth, a harrowing six-episode look at one of the most disturbing crimes of the 20th century. And finally, by Bell Media, who invite you to get into it this season on CTV. Well, my guest today is a terrific actress. You know her from her roles on HBO's Ballers and on Ryan Murphy's Feud, where she played Anne Bancroft during the first season of that hit series. Now, you especially know her as Dr. Jenny Cooper on the hit Canadian drama Coroner, which starts its third season Wednesday, February the 3rd on CBC. Please welcome Surinda Swan. Surinda, hi.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing well. Now, why the heck are you talking to me today?
I'm talking to you because I haven't had proper human interaction in like 11 months. So well, I will jump at any opportunity to have proper human connection. And we've spoken each season. And I'm like, yes, Bill, let's have another conversation.
I appreciate that. I don't know if I qualify as proper human interaction,
you do.
Okay.
During a pandemic, you do. Just take it. let's take all the compliments we can get in a pandemic. Like, we are all just, you know.
No kidding. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm borderline proper, I think, but I'll take that, especially to talk to you. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. And how have you been? It's been tough on all of us. What's it been like for you working and living through the last 11 months or so?
It's been interesting, I'll definitely say. I've had so many different experiences. Like, the first 4 months, I was in quarantine in my house in Los Angeles. I flew my mom out to make sure she was safe with me. And then I just was like a human potato, basically, and didn't do anything. And then I went to Vancouver and I like whipped myself into shape and became like an adventure person and was like out and sailing up to Desolation Sound. And then I had to get my brain into, you know, an 80-day shoot for Jenny Cooper and become a coroner again. So I had this sort of whiplash effect over the last 11 months, from potato to, you know, an adventurer to a coroner, which has been, you know, it's been interesting on the body, mind, and soul, but I'm very grateful for.
well, good for you. And I think I follow you on Instagram, and mm-hmm. I've seen your mom on there. She's a beautiful woman, and I believe you're doing makeup on her in a couple of instances. Is that true?
I was.
Yeah,
yes. My mom actually, she came to Toronto to come. My mom is actually nomadic. So when I say my mother is homeless, people get very, very worried, but she's not homeless. But technically she is homeless because she doesn't have a home, but she's been nomadic for 10 years. And so she travels everywhere from like India and Malaysia, and she lives in Sweden and Norway for a few months every year. And so she just travels. So when the pandemic hit, she obviously wasn't traveling. And so immediately I was like, mother, come live with me, please. You need to be safe. So that's also been fun, has been living with my mother for, you know, 7 months of a pandemic. Luckily, she's a very wonderful human being. But I have a lot of friends that are like, what do you mean? You willingly invited your mother to live with you for 7 months during one of the hardest times ever. But yeah, one of my very close friends owns this incredible makeup company called Elia that's all organic and it's all clean, and it's vegan and ethically sourced and just like cruelty free. It's my favorite. So I post little videos, and my mom every once in a while likes to get glammed up. I was like, Mom, I want to glam you up with my Elia stuff. And she was like, let's do it. So we had a lot of fun doing that. You got to find stuff to do.
It's fun to see. Good for you. She's a very, very beautiful woman, and you can see where it comes from.
See, this is why I'm calling in, because this is great human interaction.
Well, you're going to like what I'm going to say about the third season of Coroner as well. I just watched the screener And I love this episode. It's tremendous, and it hits home for me. I don't know if do you have a loved one, anyone, a family member who's in a long-term care center yourself?
I don't, but my grandmother does live in a community that is similar to a long-term. It's like long-term light, we call it, but it is okay. A community of seniors that I'm very cautious of.
Mm-hmm. Well, this episode of Coroner finds Dr. Cooper going into a long-term care center. There's mm-hmm. A tragedy has happened. You're examining it. And if you're, you know, watching dramas that have been shot recently during COVID, it's fascinating to me because here's an episode that takes this issue head on. Everybody is masked up and taking precautions because you're literally walking into a long-term care center where mm-hmm. people have been dying. So it's ripped from the headlines, really,
this
episode. Did it make it any easier to shoot it that you were already in character wearing masks and gowned and everything, or did it make it more complicated?
I think it's interesting because, you know, I was doing an interview before this and like, it must've been so difficult to play this character. And I was like, well, what's, you know, as an actor, we're always playing some sort of heightened reality, whether it's with aliens or superheroes or, you know, whatever it might be, or even just emotions or like, you know, a horror story. Like I've never been chased around a forest by a half man, half alligator, but like I have to put myself in that situation, you know, but I have run through a forest because I've been scared of a bear. So I've like, which I know is not smart, stop, drop, whatever it is. I learned that after the fact, but what I'm saying is that you can take personal experiences and you can apply it to your character. And so it was interesting because I was currently obviously going through a pandemic. So I was able to apply that to my character, but it was much more heightened because of how she currently had to interact with the pandemic and understanding more on the frontline workers. Like for me, wearing an N95 in regular life, I was like, "Oof, this is exhausting." But when I got to set, it was a surgical mask with an N95, with goggles, with a shield mask, with an entire, what we call our bunny suits.
Wow.
And the physical toll on that just created a separate awareness and empathy for people that were doing that every single day.
Yeah. Well, you show that on the episode. You talk about the bruising on the face and the nose and everything that people that are caregivers now have to endure all the time, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I actually would have them at the end of the day from days that we had big scenes where we had to wear them consistently. And I remember going home and icing my face and just being like, the reality was something that, you know, normally it's not quite so close to home. You use what you've experienced to help guide your character rather than what you are experiencing to help guide your character. So it was an interesting season to have both so close together.
Yeah, no kidding. In January of 1971, one of the most sensational murder trials in American history took place. Charles Manson and three members of his so-called family were convicted of the brutal murders of 9 people, including Hollywood director Roman Polanski's movie star wife, Sharon Tate, who was pregnant at the time of the slayings. 50 years later, that horrible crime still haunts us. Now, if you saw Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood last year, you saw, in part, a fictionalized account of the crime. Starting February 11th, Hollywood Suite brings us a 6-part documentary, Helter Skelter, an American Myth. Here's your chance to see how truth can sometimes actually be stranger than fiction. We see Manson on his sordid journey through reform schools, jail and prison, to his travels to Haight-Ashbury and eventually Los Angeles, where he mingled with rock royalty. Directed by Leslie Chilcott, Helter Skelter, an American Myth, is the most definitive recounting of the Manson family story ever put on screen. See it starting February 11th on Hollywood Suite. Let's back up just a minute, though. You say you were chased by a bear? What? When did this happen? Tell me about that.
It's less of, I think I was chased versus I just ran. I saw a bear and I just took off running. It was in West Van. It was up in the British properties. And which is like kind of the dumbest thing you can possibly do. So luckily I wasn't chased by the bear. At least I zigzagged and I just ran directly downhill. And then I was like, just swam across a river at Capilano and there wasn't a bear, but like, honestly, like how much the bear actually followed me. Like literally the bear probably looked at me and was like, why is that crazy lady running so far? I'm not even interested in her, you know, but I was like, ah! And then I just ran. But I was staying right near a place in the British properties. I had bears coming into my backyard all the time too. I was like, it was I was very scared of them. And then I realized if you just like bang a pot, they're actually more scared of you.
Wow. Well, you're from West Vancouver. Is that correct?
I am. Yeah. Like in the non-bear territory. I was not in the British properties. I was like in the seagull territory or like the squirrel territory. Like we didn't get any bears where we lived.
Gotcha. Were you, how old were you when this happened?
I had been probably, what grade are you, or what age are you when you're ninth grade?
So 13 or like 14 13. Or something.
Yeah, yeah, I was about 13. Okay. Yeah.
My goodness. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I have my mom is in a long-term care center here in Brampton where I live. Very, very fortunate. It's been a great, safe place. They have had no fatalities there, knock wood.
Wow.
We have had occasional outbreaks among the staff and then they let everyone know. And, you know, I have, been happy not being able to see her has been tough, but we do a iPad call every week.
Yeah.
Did get to sort of get into a tent in the summer and see her physically, but it's been a bit frustrating, but it's just good to have that iPad window to see that she's happy and you know, okay. In the episode, you know, you're dealing with people who are furious, who have not been able to see their loved ones and don't understand the need for precautions, but I just found that that's actually very realistic, isn't it? I mean, they did their homework on this episode. And it'll be a fascinating one for anyone in this situation because you guys really peel back the curtains on what's happening in Ontario and across Canada right now.
Yeah. We really try to do it without any judgment too. Like that's the thing the person that's angry that they don't get to see their mother, you know, based on what you're seeing and people actually have empathy for that now. Yeah, like there's like, it's, I think that's one of the biggest things that this whole experience has taught me is like, even today I was walking, out, as I said, I'm in Miami right now about to head to Savannah to start another project. And, I was walking this morning and I just looked at this woman, who was passing me in a car and she was sobbing. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I just like my whole heart went out to her and just was like, I am so sorry. And I understand. And like, you just don't know what's behind the mask figuratively and literally, you know, everybody is going through something and whether or not you can see their emotions because you can see their face or whether it's hidden, you know, even if you can see their face, you know, there's so much going on and it didn't mean that our lives stopped because the pandemic started. You know, everything that was a problem before might even be more amplified or you just have more issues. And I just think it's this level of like understanding and empathy is so important because people who may not know that your mother is in long term, like it's amazing and so grateful that she's happy and healthy. But it's also one of those things that you have to carry that, you know, that energy now of worrying that, you know, this is a real reality as we show in the show that these things are, you know, out there and it's, everybody has something else that's on top of their norm. And I just, that woman seeing her drive by, like it almost brought me to tears. Cause I was like, I was you a few weeks ago. Like cried. I've, you know, walk cried. I've cried. I've done all of it.
It's an emotional time. Now, given how, you know, dark in many ways the episode is, there's very funny moments. I don't want to give anything away, but there's a karaoke scene in the middle of this episode that is hilarious. How much fun was that to shoot?
Well, so here's the thing. It was a lot of fun, except for the fact that without giving too much away, when you see me eat the lovely brownie that they give me at the beginning,
right?
In the script, it says Jenny devours brownie. And I was like, hey guys, how many shots are we doing this in? Like, how much coverage is there? And they're like, oh, it'll be only like two shots, like 2 points of coverage. And I was like, because I have to eat a brownie for each take. So let's just be really honest about this. Cut to like six setups later and like 14 brownies deep. I am like wanting to, I have not eaten a brownie since. Like, I wanted to die. I was so excited to get those brownies. I was like, yes, I get to eat. Like, the kid inside of me was so stoked that I get to be this like glutton. This little human, but like after a certain point I was like, please no more brownies. But it was tons of fun, and it was nice to have that levity, and I think that's something that's really people get to look forward to on this season, is that we really find the comedy in the exhaustion. When we go down, we go up. And I think that's a conscious choice that I've made for Jenny this season, up until a certain point where there's I've made a new choice for her at the end of the season that I'm excited to explore in what would be our potentially next season. So,
okay. There's a little teaser. That's good to hear. Yeah. All right. I love that scene. Very sweet scene with you and Roger. Very funny.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, have you ever unknowingly eaten a spiked brownie?
Yep. I have not a brownie. It was actually a piece of chocolate. I had lost a role on the new Star Trek movie. It was down to me and one other girl. This was five years ago. Yeah. No, longer than that. 7 years ago, because I wasn't blonde yet at that point. And I went over to my friend's house, and her husband was a hairdresser, and I was bawling. I was so sad that I'd lost the role. And I was like, dye my hair. And I lost it. Part of the reason was because I wasn't blonde, and this other girl was blonde. And I was like, dye my hair blonde now. And he was like, okay. And he was like, this is the worst time to ever do anything. I'm like, you know me, I'm not an emotional person when it comes to like these types of decisions. I'm fine. And they're like, all right, we're going to get you a glass of wine. We'll put out a chocolate bar. I'm going to mix the dye for you. My girlfriend came and they came back, and I had eaten like half a bar of the chocolate and like drank a glass of the wine. And they were like, did you eat all of that chocolate? And I was like, don't shame me now. I need chocolate. I'm like, don't shame me. And they're like, no, it's fine. It's fine. But it's weed chocolate. Like, you just ate weed chocolate. And I lost my mind. Like, it didn't hit me until I went to my relatively new boyfriend's house that night. I walked there because he lived right next to them, and he was coming home from a movie that he had been shooting. And I just like was pacing in the living room, because I'm like, if I'm sitting on the couch, then he's going to think that I'm, you know, that I'm not comfortable. And if I'm like laying in bed, because I really just want to go to sleep, he might just think that I've invited myself to stay over. So what, I should just like be on the move between the kitchen and the living room when he walks in, and then he won't have any assumptions. And so for like 45 minutes, I just like stood like an idiot in the middle of the living room until he came home, and he walked in, and the first thing he said was, what is wrong with you? You look so high. And I was like, I am. I eat so much weed chocolate. And he gave me a big hug, and it was actually very, very, very sweet.
Oh, that's a great story. I got to work that into an episode of Coroner, I think, coming up.
It was very problematic. And you also have to remember that like my hair was suddenly blonde. Like, he just looked like I had some sort of existential crisis, started doing drugs, and stood in the middle of his living room.
Funny.
Are you okay? Yeah.
Well, Sarinda, we're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, I have a hair question for you.
Oh, so right. Okay.
Just hold on 1 second, and we're going to do a little sponsor break. And we'll be right back with Sarinda Swan.
Great.
Now, if you're already a Super Channel subscriber, you know all about When Calls the Heart, the homespun historical drama set in the fictional frontier town of Hope Valley. Here's something I can't believe. The series returns for its 8th season this month on Super Channel. Part of the reason for that is Aaron Krakow, who plays schoolteacher Elizabeth Thatcher. I met the Hallmark movie queen on the set of the series way back when it began shooting in British Columbia 8 seasons ago. Hope Valley is actually a standing outdoor set built on a farm field in the valley south of Vancouver. It has a saloon, a schoolhouse, general store, a hotel, a blacksmith shop, a church, several other buildings, all built just for this series. I even got to ride in a genuine stagecoach used on the show, and I still have the back pain to prove it. Season 8 introduces some exciting new characters, but the question Hardys want answered is this. Who will it be for Elizabeth, Nathan or Lucas? So many suitors, so little time. If you're looking for some frontier romance to escape today's headlines, watch When Calls the Heart when it returns Sunday, February 21st at 9 p.m. on Super Channel Heart and Home and anytime on demand. We're back with Sarinda Swan. We're talking about Coroner. It returns for a third season on Wednesday, February the 3rd. And don't miss it. It's a fantastic episode. I've seen it. I loved it. And really, really enjoy it. Now, Sarinda, I notice every season on Coroner, it is very realistic because this is what people do. Your hairstyle is different. And what is it about? Let me see if I could put this. Is there a motivation about hair and what this says about this particular season? Like, is your hairstyle give away anything that's going on with this character?
Well, I think part of it was just being really honest about the fact that the last time I had had a haircut was at the end of the season, the last season, season two. And then we went into a pandemic and I was like, well, I'm not getting a haircut. So how the heck is she? Like, that's not a real thing. And so I was like, well, I also feel for Jenny cutting her hair at the beginning of season one was like a very utilitarian, very just like, I don't want to be who I was. I just need to move on. Like, I need to not be defined by anything. And, you know, and now she's sort of, as she's figuring herself out, she's sort of just letting it grow out. But a lot of it was very, you know, as soon as I got to set, they're like, do you want to cut your hair? And I was like, could Jenny get a haircut? And they're like, no. And I was like, then no. It wouldn't make sense if her hair, and honestly, a pixie cut is the hardest thing to maintain. And if I had kept a pixie for the entire season, anybody that has one and that was currently going through a pandemic and having to grow theirs out would be like, lies. Those are such lies. There's no way that your hair can stay like that. Cause you go from like super cute and chic to just like homeless so fast. Like it's just, it's not like there is no way that you can survive the pandemic without getting your hair cut. So, that's yeah, funny. So it was a bit of a transformation, but I'm actually enjoying it now. Like I currently have my hair in like a little ponytail and I was like, oh, what is this magic? I haven't had, you know, ponytailable hair for, you know, since 2017.
Well, good for you. You're right. It's everybody. I'm sitting here with a big, long white beard. I look like I'm auditioning for Santa Claus, the movie or something. So
it's great. I kind of love the freedom right now to just be like, well, let's see what happens.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, let's talk a bit about your co-stars here, Roger Cross, of course, yeah. And Nick Campbell. I've had the pleasure to speak with both of them in the last year. And these guys are big fans of yours. They're quick to praise you. Campbell says you're the real deal, which is sort of, to me, that's like getting knighted or a blessing from the Pope or something, right? I mean, that's coming from Nick Campbell. What's it like working with these two? What have you learned maybe from either or both?
Well, I'll say definitely with Nick. I mean, I'm very grateful that he enjoys working with me. I think it is, he's so supportive on set and he is just, yeah, he's like, you know, he's my dad on the show, but he's also a Canadian legend. So like, I know my first few scenes with him, I was like a little extra like performative and I had a bit of a like me, can I have your approval come through? And now we're in this like beautiful spot where we can just play and he really works a lot with like ad-libbing and like, you know, massaging scenes so he can feel in the moment and I can really play off of him that way. But I will say that he is very well behaved on our show in the sense of just being such a team player and giving it his all and being supportive of me when, you know, I'm because it's a lot to carry. You know, it's a large lead role. A lot of the times you can have a lead, but it's a very large supporting cast.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, she's in almost every single scene, and yeah. with all of the anxiety and now with the pandemic and dealing with her father and her partner and her love interest and her son and the death of her husband and being stabbed and her house burning down and that, like, you just are like, whoa. And sometimes yeah. like, it's always really important for me to be able to like make sure that, you know, Jenny is always looking at the current situation through the lens of the past, because that's how we do it. As much as we want to say that we're able to leave the past behind, it's not true. We always are bringing our past into our present, and it's, you know, it's really shaping our future. And so I try to make sure that Jenny's aware of this as much as she can, but that we're bringing these past experiences and honoring them, because sometimes shows just are like, and scene, and we're done with that trauma, and now on to the next. And you're like, no, it's still there. So Nick's really patient, and he's very supportive, and you know, it's lovely to work with him. And Roger, I've known for 15 years, and we, wow. you know, we have a lot of fun together. And I think this season brings our two characters a lot closer. And I love, you know, I talked to the creators at the beginning of the show, and I was like, look, there was a scene where there was like a movement towards romance between the two of them that actually ended up getting cut. Because I spoke to them and I was like, you know, what's the one of the ones things that we don't really see on television that often? And I'm like, authentic friendship between a man and a woman,
mm-hmm.
like yeah. real authentic friendship that develops not out of, you know, knowing each other from the past or being in the same circles, but something where you see a little bit of stress at the beginning and their ability to be able to communicate and be empathetic and take the time and energy to understand, and you start building a really beautiful relationship. I was like, can we see that evolve? Because I think it's really beautiful. And also for what's going on with the Black Lives Matter movement and yeah. with equality, I think, you know, you've got a female lead and a Black co-lead, and you have issues. Like, we talk about Black Lives Matter on the show this season. We deal with the riots. We deal with things like this. Mm-hmm. We deal with health issues with Donovan as well. And, you know, you see the friendship bloom and you start to see them really lean on one another. And so being friends with Roger for so long, that was something that I just was like, hey, can we really lean into that? And I think you see that in the first episode. You start to see the fun that they're going to have, and you start to see
yeah.
that side of things. And so it was really exciting that they really honored that since season one and was like, actually, yeah, let's do that instead. And I was like, yeah. really? Great.
No, it works. And you're right. And it is authentic. People do have friendships with members of the opposite sex that are close and warm mm-hmm. and sweet. And I think that there was a scene, was it last year, where you end up as a wedding guest at the last yeah. minute for him and show support that embrace that notion too, that they weren't as close as they were. They weren't perhaps a romantic couple, but they were just really great friends.
They're friends. And,
it works really well.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we actually don't get a lot of people being like, I want them to be together. Like, you get the odd one, yeah. but I'm like, but that, yes, we understand that. But like, one of my best friends is a guy, like, and like super, super close, like one mm-hmm. of my closest friends. And I'm like, it's really hard to, we don't ever see that representation on television. So I like that we're slowly moving towards that between the two of them and watching it organically grow.
Yeah, no kidding. Also, just single out this episode too. It looks great. I think Adrian Mitchell, I think, was the director on the opener, and the camera work, everything is really beautiful. It has a lot of scenes in the woods as well as intimate dark scenes in a, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's got everything going on. What kind of a difference does it make for you in terms of different directors, different episodes? Does each director bring a style or something to it that adds to your show?
Absolutely. I think it's funny, this season I use this analogy, and I'm not sure if it's a good analogy, but it's the only one that's really, I don't have a lot of space in my mind for like thinking of clever things when I'm dealing with everything. I'm like, uh-huh. I'm at capacity for, you know, very, intelligent analogies. But for me, I found that, you know, when you're working at this level, of acting in the sense of, you know, you're doing 10 to 15 pages a day for 80 days. And you're going through the range of emotions and you're going through, you know, indoors, outdoors, you know, all the physicalities yeah. and emotionals and emotional capabilities and all of that. I think it's sort of like, and I think I actually thought of this because I was sitting beside Nick and he was talking about horse racing, but,
which he often does.
Exactly. He's always like, if you want to come to the race course, like I will bring you. I was like, thanks, Nick. We're almost like racehorses in the sense of, you know, we know where we're going and we're going at a speed where, you know, the wrong turn is actually kind of dangerous because at this point we've really locked in on who these characters are and we know where the finish line is for the end of the episode and also for the end of the season. Like for me, I really lock in a through line from before I even start season one. I have to understand the arc of Jenny until the end of the season. And so a director that understands how to race you in a way that is just very small, really eloquent refinements that just helps cut a corner, gives you a little less resistance, lets you get from A to B, or, you know, you can make your lap easier. Those you can really feel the difference. But if you get a director that's trying to make you do too many things and weave you in and out through your other, you know, the other horses, or like just literally turn you in the wrong direction, you can lose your orientation very, very quickly. And so when you have somebody that comes in, and Adrian's very visual, to be able to come in and explain the world in which you're running in, to understand, you know, visually how it's going to support you, it's really beautiful. And we've had some really amazing ones. We also had another director named Charles Officer, who was a lot of fun. And we had another director named Sammy that I just really enjoyed working with as well. So yeah, there were some really, really great directors this season that I felt actually made me a better horse. see the analogy falls at the end when I have perfect. To be like, I'm the horse.
You brought it right to the finish line. Now, if you've been listening to these podcasts, you've heard me mention CTV's slogan this season, get into it. Get into what, you ask? Well, CTV already has TV's top-rated drama, The Good Doctor, TV's top-rated comedy, Young Sheldon, and the top-rated reality show, The Masked Singer, and a brand new show to the CTV schedule, Call Me Kat, starring Maya Bialik. You know her best as Amy Farrah Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. On this new series, she plays a college professor who turns 39, takes the money her parents were saving for her wedding, and instead opens a cat cafe. Which reminds me, I went into a cat cafe once and I said, I'll have coffee with no cream. And the waitress said, I'm sorry, sir, we're all out of cream. You'll have to have it with no milk. Is this mic on? Testing. Anyway, call your cat and get into it this season on CTV. Now, a couple of questions while we'll wrap up here just on things that I always like to ask people. I don't know if you watched a lot of TV when you were growing up in the Vancouver area, but if you did you have a favorite children's show? What was something you might have really cherished growing up on TV?
Well, it's funny because I wasn't allowed to watch television except for 2 times a week. So I actually learned how to, I'm a very, very skilled lip reader because I used to turn the television on in the basement and watch it on mute. And so I actually learned how to lip read that way so that I could, which is an odd skill to have, but I was like, cool. But the 2 times I was allowed to watch it was on Thursday nights at 8 PM to watch the best television show, which was called Due South.
Yes, of course. Paul Gross. Great Canadian series. Yeah.
Loved that show. Like religiously. My grandmother would pick me up from gymnastics and make me leave 10 minutes early so we could race home and we'd eat tortellinis and Caesar salad. And her and I would watch Paul, who used to call my grandmother mom because he was friends with my dad back in the day.
Oh, wow.
And she would sit there proud and I would love the dog and that was it. And then my program that I watched on Saturday mornings with her or Sunday mornings with her was Captain Planet. And that was like my jam. Which
Captain
was
Planet. I don't remember. Yeah. This is after my time clearly. But what was that one about?
Their theme song was like, Captain Planet, he's our hero, gonna take pollution down to zero. Like, it was about cleaning up the planet, basically, which makes total sense for me. Like, other kids are watching, like, Animaniacs, and I'm like, the power of solar, the power of wind. Like, it was, like, literally kids finding, like, issues that were happening around the world, and then they'd solve them with, like, Captain Planet.
Certainly, you've made my day because the last question I always ask is, do you have a favorite theme song growing up? You actually sang the theme to Captain Planet. That is an awesome theme. I want to hear that. I'm going to go Google that on YouTube
now.
You
have to Google it. Please, like, if you can play it, you have to play. It is like when I actually go back and sing it, I'm like, this was like my childhood. Like, other kids are singing like the Looney Tunes or like things like that. And I'm right. I went to Waldorf school, so it makes sense because that was like a very hippie school. But I remember like singing that when I made it to high school, and I was like, note to self.
Score, was this like an art school in Vancouver?
It's like a Stein school. So gotcha. It's like a Montessori basically, but it was very much like a very art feeling based school.
Well, and the school school mascot was Captain Planet, I'm guessing.
I'm sure it was probably like a rock or like a carrot that was growing. Like, we grew our own food. Like, it was that aggressive. So it makes sense that Captain Planet was like my jam.
That's funny. Well, and Due South too, the dog was magnificent on that show.
Wasn't he?
Was it a husky or a...
It was a husky. A husky, and he would smell something, and then Paul would go over and he would taste it, and then the other guy was always like, that's disgusting, but then he'd solve the case because he had tasted it and he was like, oh, it's an oil spill from like the 1800s, like it was just, or like a rare tea blend from Japan where it's only sold in the second shop to the left. Like, it was just the best.
And of course it also featured Leslie Nielsen. There's not a single project, a TV show or movie that could not be improved, this is my theory, then without just adding Leslie Nielsen. So I always look forward to him. Sarinda, it's so great to talk to you and catch up. Great success with this third season of Coroner, which starting Wednesday, February the 3rd on CBC, and on your other project, which I hope to catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. It'll be a good one. We'll want to talk about it.
Yeah. But all best, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Best of luck.
Obviously. Thank you so much, Bill. Always a pleasure. So let the horn do the tonight.